when the world becomes so much of a grind and the things that you did think you were passionate about just become so hard to do and so tiring, right? That constant state of exhaustion and that like lack of passion anymore. That's when you really got to start asking yourself, you know, maybe I've changed enough over X amount of years that maybe it's time to tap into a different part of myself and really go that way.
Welcome to Queer Hustle, where we talk to the hottest up-and-coming queer entrepreneurs about growing businesses, creating dream lifestyles, and taking care of each other. Your host, Michelle Coyle, sits down to work together to explore what's possible when you approach business with full authenticity.
Hey, queer hustlers, welcome to another episode of Queer Hustle, where we showcase the coolest queer entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michelle Coyle, and I am so excited today to have Kirsten Beske with us. She's a transformational mindset coach. Kirsten, you want to introduce yourself to the group and tell us a little more about what that means?
Sure thing. Yes, I am a transformational mindset coach because I personally also have transformed because I was trained as a lawyer and practiced law for actually over a decade. And then I wanted to do more good in the world, went back to school, became a psychotherapist, practiced psychotherapy over a decade. And then the last 5 years or so have really tapped into the power of positive psychology. And I've become a mindset coach and I work with professionals and entrepreneurs who are trying to, you know, change their personal identity, upscale, and really thrive in their lives. And so I work with people who are trying to move through stages of change and become their next best version of themselves.
After going through many stages of change yourself, my God, just a little bit ambitious. How many degrees do you have?
Enough. I didn't get another doctorate. I was like, I don't need a PhD. I got a master's level. It's like, you know, that's why I'm a psychotherapist, not a psychologist. So many
letters still.
Too many letters. Right. I knew I wanted to work one-on-one with people and help them move through change. So that's all I needed to do was get another master's degree to be able to do that. So
I'm all for like the what do we need to do it? And then let's go do it. That's entrepreneurial, right? And you work with slightly older people. I don't want to say older people because I'm turning 40 in a couple of weeks. You told me over 40. This is such an interesting time in life, right? People are coming into second careers or their kids are growing up and they had kids and they're starting to think, you know, what now? Here's what I did to survive, right? Or what I thought I should do or what my parents thought I should do. Or, you know, I was on a path and now maybe that wasn't fulfilling and now I want to do something completely different. How do people know? What's the moment that they have where they go, this isn't working, I need to do something else?
Well, you know, lots of signals, right? So some people get physically ill, right? Because whatever they're doing is so not fulfilling and not real, and they're tapping into their authentic potential, right? That they actually get physically ill. And so that can always be a very clear sign that maybe something needs to change. But I think more than that, it's just more that kind of when the world becomes so much of a grind and the things that you did think you were passionate about just become so hard to do and so tiring, right? That constant state of exhaustion and that like lack of passion anymore. That's when you really got to start asking yourself, you know, maybe I've changed enough over X amount of years that maybe it's time to tap into a different part of myself and really go that way. And then sometimes we do things when we're younger that we need to do to survive. Like I recall when I graduated law school, I had a lot of debt. And so I think it took me over a decade to just pay off my law school loans to give myself the financial freedom to consider what else I could do. And so I think sometimes we're, you know, trying to buy houses or trying to pay down debt and we don't actually think we have choices. And as we get older, we realize, well, you know, I've paid that debt down, or I, you know, this is my one life. This is my chance to really decide to make my impact on the world the way I want to, as opposed to what I've had to do to just to get by.
Absolutely. What are some of the major transitions that people want to make? I know a lot of people are becoming coaches now and looking to, you know, how can they help other people? Does it go from, you know, how do I get myself set up to how do I help other people? What's the normal narrative there?
Right. Well, so yeah, when you think about stages of development as a human, depending on who you listen to, you know, the Erikson model, we move from more of a self-centered viewpoint into a more altruistic, generative, like he called it, stage of life where we start to give back more. And so there is kind of that natural inclination where we've been in the world long enough. We've got actually quite a bit of wisdom built up, but we've got quite a bit of experience built up, and we've seen enough of the world that we know, oh, I could actually make an impact on something else. And so it's kind of a combination of all those little factors that add together to just kind of be an impulse to, yes, I may only have X amount of years left on this planet. How do I want to spend it? How do I want to impact the world? How do I want to make sure that I've like lived my life to the fullest, made the best and fullest impact that I can? And so then the urgency gets more and more each decade, right? Because each decade you're like, well, I've got this much more. I've got this much more if I'm lucky, right? So just that time urgency can increase the desire to really make the change and really make sure that there's not things left undone that you really hoped that you could help change in the world. But giving back to other people, making sure you leave the world in a better place, those are the kind of things that come up more and more as you get older. And for a lot of people who have parented, when you reach in your later 40s and your 50s and your children are growing up and going either off to college or actually being, you know, independent, you've spent the first 20 years basically figuring out how to give lots of time to being a parent. And then you get to all of a sudden be like, wait a second, now I have all this time again. What do I want to do? You've spent so long not knowing, not having the time to do what you want that now you have the freedom and the time, but you might have to recalibrate and re-clarify what you think your highest purpose might be going forward. So the cool part is you have more time and freedom and probably a little bit more accumulated wealth at that point, you know, if you're lucky. So you have some choices that you can make, which is simultaneously wonderful and exciting and freeing and terrifying to people, because it can kind of make people, you know, just like close down because the options are so available and they haven't thought about options in years because they've been too busy taking care of their family. So
yeah, it's like I've been putting one foot in front of the other, getting the mortgage paid, getting the kids, you know, college savings, getting groceries, and now what? Oh my God, that can be, it's exhilarating and terrifying at the same time. So as people are moving into this sort of legacy stage of life, what do I want to leave behind? What are some of the fears that hold them back? And what are you helping, you know, coach people past?
Well, yeah, so that's a great question. And so, and fears is the right word, but it doesn't always come up that way. So usually what happens is it comes up with, I have a vision, right? Like if you ask someone, what if you could do anything you wanted, what would you do? Now, I have to say there is a certain percentage of people when you ask them what they'd like to do, if they could do anything, they actually don't have an answer for you. They have closed down that channel of their brain so fully to do whatever they needed to do that they literally can't open it up and get creative about what they might like to do. That's one step of work to do. But if people have been able to be imaginative and they could imagine, well, I think I would really like to do this and these are the reasons. And then if you dig a little deeper, well, so have you thought of doing this before? Usually it answers yes. And so what stopped you from doing it? And often that's where things get murky. And so that's where we can do some real powerful work, because what happens is our fears and our implicit like limiting beliefs that are like these invisible belief systems we hold in us that we sometimes don't even identify, because they're like the water we swim in, the air we breathe, right? So those limiting beliefs can often start getting in the way in interesting ways, so that the person feels stuck. They just feel like, well, I know I'd like to do this, but I can't do this, or I just won't do this, right? The procrastination or the perfectionism or even some imposter syndrome comes up, and it keeps people stuck with just the idea and not taking any action towards the plan. And so the very deep work that I can do with folks, which is a little different than other coaches who do mindset work, who are more tactical. Like there's obviously tactics and tools and skills you can use, but there's also some of this deeper, more transformational work around these limiting beliefs that, because of my background in psychology and my work as a psychotherapist, I can work safely with people to get past some of these deeper blocks that are holding them back from becoming the people they really want to be. So that's the deeper the part and the cooler part of the work.
Absolutely. I think it's so interesting when we talk about getting past mindset blocks. What are the fears that come up, and what do we know? What do we not even know that is holding us back? What are those unnamed fears a lot of times, even in when we're working with startup businesses, we're talking to people about, you know, just say it out loud and then ask if it's true, because there's so many internalized nuggets that people, beliefs that people think are true. And all they have to do is sometimes say it out loud. Oh, I'll never get a loan, or nobody that at that level would ever want to work for me. And then they say it out loud and you go, wait, is that true? Is that even logically true? Is it nobody? Is it everybody? Is it always? Is it never? And they go, oh, wait, no.
And then the interesting part is you can actually answer your question. Like, I love that. That's, you know, great. Is it true? And they can, and a person can say, no, I know it's not true, and still get stuck. And that's where that word fear comes in. We all have these internal protectors that come out that want it, that familiar things are safe and unfamiliar things aren't safe. And so there's all these parts that come in to protect us and keep us, what, you know, put safe in quotes, because those parts don't understand that it actually would be okay to move into this zone of the unknown to explore whether these options might actually happen. And that's the interesting part, where we start getting in our own way because of that. You know, we have that attraction for the familiar, you know, we repel the unfamiliar because it seems dangerous. And that's, it's natural. We all have this negativity bias that's like been baked into us over the evolutionary, you know, decades. But that's the part that we need to overcome. And that's where, especially when you're moving into a zone of some, a new, like when you're a beginner or you're learning some new area in the world, you have to take these little, they're not even baby steps, but just like take a step of imperfect action and see how that goes, right? And just have the courage to just that one thing, and then say, oh, I didn't die because I called the loan officer, right, for that loan. And then like, okay, well, what else could I challenge myself on to move out of my comfort zone? And just take that little step and like, okay, I didn't die when I went on the podcast as a guest, right? You know, and so each time you build that confidence that you can weather uncomfortable and scary and new things, and you live through it, and then you can really develop that resilience for the new that will help you then, especially as entrepreneurs have to have a lot of resilience for the new, you know, and a lot of flexibility to be able to pivot and change as circumstances warrant. And but that's a muscle you can actually build up over time, which I'm sure you do that work with your clients as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's just a lot of times about rewriting that story. And it's naming that story. What's the story? I could never X. And it's like, okay, well, let's just change the story. Stop thinking about the why and the how, and let's just get to this new story. Oh, I could do X. Okay, what makes that true, right? And realizing that we can come up with beliefs and evidence to support any outcome, right? If I decide that I'm ugly, I could tell you 10 reasons why I'm ugly. If I decide that I'm pretty, I could tell you 10 reasons why I'm pretty. And so we're often digging in and saying, you know, stop, drop, and write 50 reasons why that's true.
That's great. I love that. Yeah. Yep. And then what's the action step that comes after that? Right. Like once you have the aha moment and the light bulb goes off, what behavior can you then change as a result of that?
Right. And I feel like a lot of times that tends to flow, you know, once the mindset comes along, that's the hard part, right? Once the mindset is in the right place, then the actions become more evident, become more obvious.
And yeah, it's like a nice little oil for the machinery to move forward.
Yeah. Yes, like if you're stuck, you know, the wheel's not moving, but once it's moving, then we can be open to whatever's happening. But some of my clients were asking me today about manifestation and woo stuff. And I said, look, it's not, I don't think it's magic. I think it's about getting out of your own way. And when we're in a contracted space, I need money, I need money, I need money. We're not open to receiving whatever's coming over here. And it's not that the signals are different. It's just that we ignore that email, or we don't really hear what that person said, or we, you know, because we're so focused in.
Exactly. And the brain science around that, there's a researcher named Barbara Fredrickson that's done a ton of research around that, probably familiar with her work. And it's just that idea that like when we have fear and our vision does contract, the people like literally lose their peripheral vision. It's not a metaphor, but they've measured in studies. And when people are scared, they lose their peripheral vision and they can't see the options that are out there for them. And so being able to be in a creative, open state requires a comfort and a not absence of fear. And then we can be creative and think flexibly and see the more options and really be able to move in a more wise way. So with money scarcity, you know, then you're losing flexibility by being scared. And so if manifestation, if you could just switch out the language and call it, you know, just being more positive and open, then you can see why by brain science that opens your creativity and your options.
Queer Hustle is sponsored by BGSD Strategies. BGSD Strategies helps queer-owned businesses scale past the $10 million revenue mark and more. To learn more, visit www.bgsdstrategies/slay. Just stay calm is easier said than done for entrepreneurs and lots of other folks. And so we talk about building your mindset like a muscle and working it out like just like you would work out in the gym. If you wanted bigger biceps, you've got to work on your mind every day if you want to be able to recover and work through your triggers faster and stay calm faster. What are you kind of prescribing these mental exercise routines or as you're working with people? How do you approach that?
Right. Well, so I absolutely like individualize all my work because I don't think there's a one size fits all for people. But because you know, as you accurately described, it is a muscle and it requires practice. I think that whatever modality people resonate with is something they do need to actually rehearse in times of not crisis, right? And so whether this, if you're repatterning your thoughts, whether it's through mindfulness or whether it's through journaling or whether it's through visualization or whatever modality you're going to pick to repattern your thoughts, your habits of thought, that does need to be practiced on a regular basis over time. And that's the only way you're going to wire in the new neural pathways that are going to stick and override what the old ones were. Without the practice, you're never going to, they say neurons that fire together, wire together. So if you don't practice it on a really regular basis, you're not going to solidify that neural pathway. And then the default will be whatever your old one was. So the rewrite has to be practiced. So I'm a big fan of, many of the different ways that people work to rewrite their neural pathways. And so if it resonates with you, I mean, some people cannot meditate, right? You know, they think, oh, I know I'm supposed to, but like, I cannot. And it's like, fine, then let's try something else, right? So something more active maybe, right? So then it's the, writing in it, writing can sometimes be helpful, or sometimes people benefit by listening, right, to someone repeating affirmations. I've had people actually do their own affirmations that they listen to, right? So there's lots of different ways to repattern, but it does involve an activity. It's not a passive rewire. There's no way to passively rewire. You have to actually put in the work.
Got it. Just like anything else, if you want the reward, you got to put in the work. Let's talk about queer stuff for a second. This is Queer Hustle. Is it harder in your experience for queer folks, other marginalized folks, to surmount some of these fears because of that extra layer of oppression that they've moved through? I mean, I know I'm generalizing because there's lots of different shades of marginalized folks, but just generally, when somebody's kind of gone through that type of oppression or hardship in their life, does that make this work harder?
Well, it's so interesting because it can, depending on the person's journey, make it easier or harder, right? So if someone has not had success in moving past all the resistance they had to being themselves in the world, then it's going to be harder to establish these new pathways. But in my experience with a lot of my clients, they have actually successfully negotiated through all that resistance to them being themselves. And so because they've been able to actually transform and be authentic and come to some level of acceptance for themselves or in their community, they actually have more skills than other people in really working with their mindset. So it really kind of depends on each person's journey and their where they've come from and who they've been supported by or who they haven't been supported by, whether they've already like got that neural pathway around transformation in. I'm sure a lot of people out there can resonate with once you've made that transition and really start to, accept yourself and accept your place in the world and found a supportive family community to be part of, really give you the support you need, then you've made a transition already. So once you transformed in one way, it makes it easier the next time you need to transform. So, and then there's the other side of the coin where for whatever reason, you grew up in the wrong part of the country where people aren't supportive and you have a harder journey to come to a place of self-acceptance. And I have a lot of compassion for people that haven't had that easy of a journey and maybe they're still in it. And so obviously then you have to understand, right, that the circumstances for you were more difficult and in your transition, you had like a longer journey to make because of where you started. And it makes sense you're taking your own time and you're doing your transition your own way. And it's still the same work. It's still finding that comfort with yourself and finding the people around you that are going to mirror you the way you want to be mirrored. So, you know, it's so interesting how different everyone's journey is, but it's the same path. It's just different timing.
It's interesting. I find the same in our work, right? We work with mostly queer entrepreneurs, and yeah, the more somebody's kind of already gone through, then the easier it is to get past new fears. I'm sure I'm shorthanding, you know, what you just said, but it's, you know, if I'm working with somebody who's trans, for instance, and they say, well, I'm afraid to start a business. And I'm like, oh my God, you already did one of the scariest things in the human experience. You can do this.
Exactly. Right. And to tap into that as a superpower, right. You know, cause I think that it is a form of a superpower to have really made that fundamental of a shift of your personal identity, inner and outer matching. That is to be have done that should hopefully give you that foundation that is like this superpower that, oh, I can almost do anything and survive.
Well, you know, we talk about what makes a good entrepreneur or a natural entrepreneur, and we've got, you know, grit, resilience, you know, these things that we build up through survival. And when we, you know, when we talk about even socioeconomic background, I'll bet on somebody that grew up broke or poor as an entrepreneur every day over somebody that grew up comfortable, because folks that grew up broke or poor, they're much more comfortable taking risks. And, you know, it's like, for me too, it's like, if I lost everything, I'd be all right. I've had nothing before. I lived through it. I'd do it again. Yeah. I'd get all the money again. Whereas folks who have always been in a more comfortable situation, they have a really hard time risking the level of comfort that they've always known. Yeah.
Right. Right. And yes. And that's actually a theme that I work with. A lot of the folks I work with have actually had these successful careers in something, or a lot, maybe even were successful athletes younger, but had this high degree of success in something. And now they're trying the next thing. And so what they actually haven't experienced failure enough. It's just so ironic. So they have a bit of a perfectionist tendency. Like they're so used to going through the world with approval of other people and having things be easy, that this is a whole new thing, then they're really uncomfortable with maybe not doing it well. And what does that even feel like for them? And so that's you have to have some degree of compassion, you know, it's hard to maybe generate a lot of compassion for someone who's been hugely successful before, but they feel the same pain and the humiliation and the, you know, the shame that they've internalized around not doing something well. And it takes a lot of work to kind of move past that and realize, hey, you're human. Just because you were a super whatever, you're still human, and this is what humans do. We struggle, and the cool part is you have the resilience and grit and perseverance of whatever you did before that you can now translate to this. And if you just be patient enough and hang in there and do the work, you're going to get the same degree of mastery over here as you had there. And so just hang in there. And the cool part is with the grit and the perseverance, they do get there, but they're just so uncomfortable along the way.
Well, absolutely. And it's, you know, sometimes we have to kind of rewrite somebody's perspective on failing, right? They'll come to me often very early stage. We dig down. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? Well, I'm afraid to fail. And I say, I'm going to take that away from you right now. You're going to fail. You're going to fail a lot. You're going to fail in little ways every day, every week into your business. And like, I've had several businesses that didn't do super hot until I figured it out and did really well. And every single time I failed, I learned so much. And there's so much to be gained from failure. We're so afraid of it. And it really comes with such power and such positivity and such learning.
Right. And so really it's a reframe around fail, right? So it's really, you never actually fail. You just always learn, right? I mean, really, what is failure? You know, failure might be death, right? You know, maybe. But other than that, it's all a learning experience and you just can build off of it.
I mean, some people say, you know, the only way to fail is to quit in entrepreneurship. But even then, it's like, you know what? If you want to quit and you're happier quitting, that's not a failure either.
It's a choice. Yeah.
Thanks for taking care of yourself. I'm glad you listened to yourself and did what was best for you, right?
Right, right. That totally makes sense. Yeah, the entrepreneur's journey is not for the faint of heart.
Definitely not. But the rewards at the end are immense.
Immensely worth it.
Immensely worth it. Well, so let me ask you this, because we do have younger folks that are listening to this that are thinking about starting businesses for the first time, or middle-aged folks that are thinking about starting businesses for the first time. What would you say to somebody that's kind of on the fence considering it?
So the advice to the folks considering it, if you have a burning passion in your heart and a message you want to put out in the world, give it a go, right? Because, you know, this I think part of the entrepreneurial journey is realizing it's actually not about you. It's more about like what comes through you and what you want to put in the world and how you want to serve, you know, and how to spend your time on the planet and impact the planet and impact the other people. So if you can get over that ego part of you, that's like, oh, this is me and I need to shine, you know, I'm scared to shine. It's like, no, it's you. And like, it's almost like your duty to shine, like let it out, like be you and do you and just go for it, because that's the only way that you're going to get to share the brilliance that is you with the rest of us. So, you know, go for it, right? It what's the point of putting a lid on it all the time? You know, it's not, you know, playing by other people's rules isn't going to benefit the world, because each person, in my personal belief system, each person has this amazing, unique light that's their job to shine. And being entrepreneurial is one way to like get that going and put it out there.
And you know what, if you're the kind of person that needs to shine, you know it in your soul. Everybody else knows it about you. Like don't fight it. Lean in.
Yeah. I mean, and even introverts need to shine, right? I mean, to be fair, like there's a fair amount of people out there that they're not naturally, they get uncomfortable being visible, right? And that is actually a lot of the work I do, because for some reason, a lot more, I work with quite a bit of the female identified people, and often they've been socialized to not be visible. You know, that is a hurdle for some people to get over and to really to translate. It's not self-centered to want to share. It's really an act of giving to share yourself with other people, to try to shift that framework so that it doesn't feel so self-centered and you realize it is a little bit altruistic to give what I have to give to the people.
Of course, because it's exhausting and it's, you know, it's hard, but there are things that you can do that help people's lives. And as entrepreneurs, that's really what it's about. It's how do we find who needs help and that we can help, and how do we go out and do that? And that is a largely selfless act for a lot of us, because a lot of us could be having a lot more time off, even making more money at the beginning, whatever, if we just went and worked for someone else, clocked it in, clocked it out. But when you think about the people that will not be helped if you don't put your gift out into the world, then you start to feel that sense of responsibility to give out there. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'd say go for it and let it out, and you won't regret it. And then, you know, you'll have made that much more impact on the world, and you won't be a 60-year-old person going with regrets, right? You know, that what if I had done that then? You know, you'll know, hey, I tried. I did it. I gave it my all, and probably succeeded if you persisted.
Absolutely. Wise words from a wise woman, Kirsten Minsky. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Everybody else, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Queer Hustle. To read the full show notes for this episode, which include a summary, timestamps, and any links mentioned in this episode, please visit michellecoyle.com/podcast. There, you'll find the information from this episode and any past episodes. If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a rating and a review at ratethispodcast.com/queerhustle. Until we meet again next week, go out there and let it shine.